Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
And I'm Matt Stein with Pixel & Tonic in Austin.
And today, we have on Caleb Porzio, who is a full-time open source slave. Hey, Caleb, how are you doing?
Great. How about yourself?
Good. And we have on Kair Shaw from Paper & More. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing excellent. And the reason we're having Caleb on is we wanted to talk about this little thing he created called Alpine.js. So, Caleb, if you were off in Dominica and you were hiking through the Valley of Desolation on your way to the Boiling Lake, and someone who's hiking there with you turned to you and said, hey, you know, what is Alpine.js? What would you tell them?
What would I tell them? I would say, I guess the taglines, the two sort of popular taglines are a rugged, we would be hiking, so this would make
sense. You're hiking.
I would say a rugged, minimal framework for composing behavior in your markup, which means something, but not at first glance. And then the other thing I would say is it's like Tailwind for JavaScript, if they knew Tailwind.
All right. And we love Tailwind. You know, awesome. Tailwind, we had Adam Watham was one of our first guests we ever had on the show. Love Adam. Love the framework. I think all of us here use it, actually. But I'm curious. So you use the word rugged along with the word JavaScript. And I have never heard these two words used together in the same sentence before. Yeah. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
So I guess when I say rugged, I mean, if you have a Vue app or a React app, or even if you're sprinkling in Vue, React, Angular components onto a page, even something, well, I guess I shouldn't speak for Svelte. That's the only one that might also be rugged. But if you flick the DOM in any way, the entire thing unravels because they all use a virtual DOM to basically, you know, track the markup. And then when you mess with it, the real DOM gets out of sync with their virtual DOM. It doesn't know what to do and it freaks out. And you know, if you mess with like most of the code run inside of it runs inside the Vue runtime. So Vue just blows up if your code blows up. And so I say rugged because Alpine does not use a virtual DOM and it uses lots of the mutation observer API. So you can flick it, you can remove DOM nodes, you can add them. You could literally like dot inner HTML on a div to add a new component and Alpine would pick it up and deal with it well. So that's why I call it rugged. It's like you could use it with jQuery, you could use it with pretty much anything else and it won't be the problem. Maybe something else would have a problem with it, but it generally is pretty resilient.
So Caleb, you're still on your hike to the Boiling Lake in Dominica.
Okay.
And the guide overhears you when you answer the question to the other person and he sighs heavily and he turns back to you and he says, does the world really need another JavaScript framework, Caleb?
Because he's just a guide and he keeps hearing all these JavaScript conversations when he's taking people out.
He does, and he's tired of them.
He is tired of it. Yes, the answer is yes. Yeah, this is funny. This is something that I get asked quite a lot, and I didn't really know. I guess I didn't anticipate it. I should have, but you know.
And you thought the one place someone wouldn't ask you this is when you're in Dominica hiking to the Boiling Lake, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, no, I would definitely not put it past the Dominicans. Yeah, so when I am asked that, I guess my response is, well, somebody just emailed me for like a questionnaire for an article on Alpine. And that was the first question. And I said, I just answered like one word, like some dismissive, like, yes, it does. That was very whatever. So the short answer is, yes, we do need another JavaScript framework. But the longer answer is I've used most of the frameworks, I guess, out there, starting, you know, with jQuery for me. But I really got into Vue.js. That was the first like big boy framework that I really sunk my teeth into and basically worked for 5 years writing front end applications with Laravel on the back end and Vue.js on the front end. So I felt like I went pretty deep on it and I really enjoyed it, but there were definitely, that's a whole other story, kind of my journey out, coming out of it. I started like experimenting with resisting the complexity of modern JavaScript and found a lot of benefits. So I kept following that journey, basically all the way back to Vanilla.js, sprinkling in just basic behavior with Vanilla.js. And that really fell short. It's so much better than it used to be with class list. And there's just, with query selector, there's so many things that it does much better now. But I felt like I still needed something. And so Stimulus, familiar with Stimulus.js?
I'm familiar with it, but I have not built anything with it.
Okay. So basically all of the, it's from the Basecamp. Well, Basecamp built it. It's like sort of extracted from their code base like Rails was. So it's sort of the JavaScript solution for Rails as passed on down like from on high by DHH. So
can I interrupt you real quick? Because I got a question that it probably is inappropriate in general, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Does anyone here use Basecamp?
No, we use Notion.
I use Basecamp.
Do you use it now though?
No, I do not.
This is the thing that blows my mind. is that I've seen Basecamp over the years and I've used it over the years. I don't know anyone that actually uses it. And yet it seems to be, you know, anything that they do, people are just like, oh, this must be amazing. But I look at Basecamp and I'm like, that's not amazing. I don't use that. I don't know anyone who uses that, you know?
Somebody's using it.
Well, someone clearly is using it. Someone's got a fun DHH's, you know, race car habit. You know, I don't know.
That's true. No, I mean, it is a good take. The last agency I worked for, we used it quite a bit when it was like Trello for basic stuff, project management, and then Basecamp for anything bigger. And it did really well. I mean, I don't know. Okay. We loved it. And I mean, Jira sucks. There's a lot of other things that suck for me. Yeah. Yet, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is kind of like pick where the suck is, right? Because pretty much any tool is kind of sucky in one way or another. Mm-hmm. I don't know. At least like when I was venturing off into Basecamp 3, it seemed very campy. Like it seemed weird. Like it had, I don't know, had these strange metaphors and strange GUI that didn't really feel quite right. And I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it's not like, it's not a cookie cutter app by any stretch of the imagination, as we all know, because everything they do, they sweat really, really hard over, and then they publish stuff about it. So I at least know that they're putting in tons and tons of critical thinking into the things that they're building. And they're very, very hard on new features. And, you know, I've read like Getting Real and Remote and Rework and all that stuff. And I really, really like the way that they think.
I like the way they think too. And I've enjoyed the articles, and I'm probably going to get like canceled for this or whatever. But when I read about them going to like a 4-day work week or whatever, I'm like, mm-hmm. You know what? You probably should work that fifth day because Basecamp needs some work.
That's very funny. It definitely isn't like a, I don't know. I don't want to say it doesn't feel polished because it does, but it doesn't. It's a different kind of interface when you're.
You know what it felt like to me? It felt like I was using, so I've got two kids and we have these school portals where they have, you know, various things and they've got games and stuff like that. That's what it felt like to me when I was using it. It felt like it had its like its own custom thing and its own paradigms, and things were, I don't know. Like
I have a trial account just to see how they name things, name their routes, name their controllers.
Oh, nice. Uh-huh.
Mostly for that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't want to derail the whole thing. It's just strange to me that, you know, I think that some of the writings that they put out are amazing, and some of the books and some of the other things that they talk about, I think they're great. But then I'm just like, well, this is your main product. Like, what's going on?
It's possible that it's one of those things where we all adore the way that they work and the software they produce, and we just assume that Basecamp will be awesome and it actually sucks. And, you know, who knows? But,
it was awesome at the time. But I think there are a lot of tools that, at least for me in the way that I work, have, you know, surpassed it like by a lot, you know.
Like what?
So even for simple things, like you were saying, I just use Trello, right? And I actually find Trello really, really nice for that. And one of the things that have been picked up lately, I resisted it for a long time, but I've been getting into using Notion. And I think the way that Notion works is actually pretty impressive. And I know, Matt, you're kind of a Notion fan, right?
Mm-hmm. I adore Notion, yeah.
Yeah. But like, for instance, for this show, for Dev Mode, I've got a Trello board that is shared and everyone uses it. And the simplicity of what it does is really nice. Now, granted, it's solving a simple case. Right, we just have upcoming episodes, we got some standard stuff that we read, you know, it's not a big deal. If I were to use this to manage a big software project, then granted, it would break down. But that's just kind of right tool for the job, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect answer. Trello is phenomenal. I love it, and I push it as far as I can. And then when I can't push it farther, well, I'm actually kind of out of the big software project game right now for the last year, so I haven't really needed anything bigger. But
congratulations!
Thank you. But Notion looks amazing, and I could very well see that is just a much better experience than using something like Basecamp.
Right. Anyway, I'm sorry for the derail.
It's a great, I'll loop it back. It's a good segue because Basecamp feels maybe good idealistically or theoretically, but the aesthetics just aren't there. And I think that is sort of, you would say that. Would you say that?
I would definitely say that. And it feels like, I know this sounds terrible, but it feels campy to me. Like the UI just felt like kind of campy and dated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the word. It's aesthetics, but also the, I can't think of it. There's a better word.
Paradigms?
No, I don't know. So Stimulus felt that way to me. It all the messaging was there, all the copy. Like if you go to stimulusjs.org or whatever it is, it you know, I read it and I'm like, it's preaching to me. I'm like, yes, yes, this is it. And a lot of people, I would, you know, tweet like, how come I can't just have this? And then they'd say, oh, you should try out Stimulus. In fact, Adam Wathen, he replied and said, he's like, oh man, like Stimulus is what you want. He's like, sometime we should hop on a pair. I'll show you my Stimulus components.
Yep.
So I go, all right, cool, Adam. I don't know if I'm sure this is fine telling the story. I go, all right, let's do it. So we hop on a call and he shows me his Stimulus components. And I think they look pretty bad. This, I don't want to just like publicly trash Stimulus, but this is just me being informal and just, you know,
it is what it is, man.
Yeah.
You know,
so I just did not personally like the way that it looks. It litters stuff all over your DOM and you end up basically writing all the like imperative DOM manipulation JavaScript yourself inside of these components. So he's like, all right, well, I guess a good test to see if it's good is if I can reuse my little dropdown or tabs component without, you know, looking up the source. If I can just, you know, create a little tab component on the page. And he couldn't, and he had to, he was like, oh, and where? And it was just kind of this thing. And then 2 days later, I brainstormed, we hashed out what, like a really early version of Alpine, just the syntax. But then like 2 days later, I went off and I started talking with a friend about it and really sitting down and figuring out like what do I want out of a JavaScript framework. And Alpine emerged in its full form. Like I literally in that moment like reached my hands up in the air at a coffee shop and said, I have it. I was like this. And this so it's
wow, did everyone look at you like you're crazy or
yeah, the deer outside stopped and
he's a JavaScript guy.
So, well, it sounds like I'm some brilliant, you know, I just had some divine insight, but really my insight was, wait a minute, I just want Vue.js without all the other stuff. Like I just want the syntax of Vue in my template and I don't want to maintain a separate file. All I care about with Vue is the data object, like the reactive data object. So if I could just declare that in my markup and then everything inside of that element that has that data attribute where I could like put the JSON inside the data attribute and then everything inside of it would have access to it. And I could do like things like in Vue, like VShow and V4 and VText and anything I wanted to do and not have to maintain an entire build, deal with Webpack, deal with all of the zillion other things that you have to deal with when you go down that road. And that basically is what Alpine is. Yeah.
Alpine is kind of like Vue, but without the virtual DOM. Is that kind of?
Yeah, it feels a lot like Vue. Yeah. So it is sort of, there's a lot of differences, but the syntax is almost entirely borrowed from Vue.
Right, which makes sense. Like if you used it for years and you're like, well, there are some really good ideas in here, you know, and you're not shy about saying that. You say, you mentioned in the docs, you mentioned it as a tribute to Vue that, hey, I love the way you did this. I'm borrowing this from Vue. Thank you very much. You know?
Which is what Evan Yu did with Angular. You know, he worked at Google and he was an Angular guy. And so when he wrote Vue, it was basically, I'm sure people looked at it and went, wait, this is Angular with V's in front of things, you know, instead of NG. So Angular kind of started that, you know.
Well, which is great. And, you know, this is what everyone does to one extent or another. You know, I mean, there aren't that many new ideas and layering them on top. And this is something I've run into too, where I'll see something and I'm like, that's a really good idea, but I think it would be better if I did it this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's kind of what you did with Alpine, it sounds like. So Kayer, you are somebody that, and we might be doing like a big introduction here, but you are somebody that you actually use Alpine quite a bit, and you actually are a contributor in some way to Alpine?
Yeah, it was my very first contribution, and I think props to Caleb for making the repository very friendly and welcoming to newcomers. I think it was the first time I've ever contributed to any open source repo. So it was kind of cool. Alpine caught my eye right from the start. We'd actually built out everything. And about 6 months ago, we'd actually compared a lot of different libraries. We've kind of been using Intercooler for the majority of the projects before for server-side HTML rendering. And then we started this new site rebuild and starting, we had a clean slate and I'm working with another developer and we did a test of kind of all the different libraries out there. We did Vue, we did Stimulus, we did Vanilla.js, jQuery, just kind of, we knew the more time we spent up front, it would pay off and later down the road if the code base was clean and easy to make updates to. And we settled on Stimulus and then about 2 months ago, I think when Alpine came out, I was looking at it and I was like, we're not going to change everything all over again. But just kept looking at it and like, whoa, it just seems really clean. It was easy to use. And when I was looking back at the old Stimulus code, it was really, like Caleb said, it was just a lot of Vanilla.js. It didn't seem, the wording, everything is great. I believe everything about it. But when you look back on the code, it just seemed, it didn't seem as helping out as much as I thought it was. You know?
Yeah. So I've got the picture of that meme in my mind where the guy is staring at this girl in front of him, and then his girlfriend behind him is like getting all mad because he's looking at her. So yeah. Kind of the girl in front is Alpine and the girl behind him is Stimulus, right? Is that kind of where you were?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And we took the time and we refactored everything. I mean, it took a while, and then halfway through we realized, oh, wait, there's some issues with IE11 now. So then that's when we still have a customer base that needs IE11. So, and it seemed I didn't want to give up using Alpine, but so then just kind of just spent some time to try to figure out. I can get stuff done, but I'm not a hardcore JavaScript developer or anything. But the repo was clean, easy to understand, and it was worth it. It was cool.
Well, I mean, you did yeoman's work, because that is something that most people don't enjoy doing. Right, Caleb?
Yeah. I mean, I basically, you know, people need IE11 support, and you know, I have a pretty stacked workload at the moment. I'm prepping for some releases, and and I was like, no, I don't have the mental space for this. If somebody else could chime in and do this, this is one of my favorite tricks is like in a GitHub issue when a bunch of people are saying it'd be like, kind of describe what I want and be like, yeah, you know, I don't really have the capacity at the moment, but I'd be totally open to a PR. And right. And then sure enough, Kair just stepped in and did it. And that is, it's the work of the Lord. It is work I do not enjoy doing. I don't want to do. I don't want to have to maintain any of those things. It's like, and I appreciate that he stepped in and did. I'm not saying I would have refused to do it, but man, it's nice that is the beauty of open source, that, you know, someone else who has the need can go, well, I'll pitch in.
So I got a question for you. Like a lot of people that are listening to the podcast, you know, maybe they use jQuery to do their DOM stuff, or maybe they just use vanilla JS these days, right? Because the platform has gotten better to the point where a lot of the jQueryisms are just, they're there in the platform. Or, you know, maybe they're a Vue or a React developer. Like who is Alpine for? Like if I was about to start a project and I normally use Vue or I normally use React, when would I say, you know what, maybe I should use Alpine for this instead?
Yeah. So the answer is a little bit different depending on where you are. So I'll speak to the two easiest targets for Alpine. The first is you're going to make a marketing site and you're going to use, I don't know, whatever, Gatsby or plain static files, whatever you're going to do. But basically, it's a marketing site, nothing crazy. And you need to toggle something. You need a little slide out, like a mobile nav bar hamburger thing, and maybe a little some other basic things in that. For that, I mean, that's use Alpine, pop it in. It's one script tag. That's it. You don't have to do anything but include the file. It will initialize itself at the right time. It will do everything it needs to do. So it's like zero config, which I adore. So if you are out there and you're building a marketing site or you're about to, give Alpine a try. It's as simple as pasting in a script tag. And basically you don't have to write any JavaScript right away. You can just start adding these attributes into your DOM and work with it firsthand. So that is the easiest in for Alpine, is somebody in that position.
So I don't need a 60K framework download, for instance, just to have a hamburger menu toggle on and off. Seriously, is kind of what you're saying.
That's what it was for me. My other big project is Livewire. It's a framework for Laravel. And basically, because of the way that it works, it's a lot like Intercooler under the hood. So it uses server fetched partials, that pattern, which, you know, no frameworks really work well with, no big JavaScript frameworks, because of that virtual DOM. And basically, so a lot of people using it went, wait a minute, how do I do dropdowns and modals? And I realized, like, everybody really, like, the most people just need dropdowns and modals. Like you can do a lot with server fetched partials and other patterns. But at the end of the day, like, to do a dropdown and a modal, like before when everybody used Bootstrap, you went to the docs, you copied the little modal giant, like, ugly thing, you pasted it in, and that was it. And now everybody's using Bulma or Tailwind, and there's no solution. So they go, well, you know, the examples use Vue.js, I got to use Vue, I need a Vue modal component. Try building a really good Vue modal component. It is terrifying. It's so unbelievably difficult. That's a whole other...
Yeah, because you have to use portals and all these other things. You know?
It's insane. To do transitions well on, like, an overlay, and to capture clicks, to not cascade to the overlay, to hide it, key bindings. That's what drew Adam Wathen to Alpine. He loves Alpine. I just paired with him today on it, because doing this stuff in Vue is just, he has a whole course, a whole series on building a modal component in Vue.
Seen his course.
And it's just killed with Alpine. So anyway, I'm meandering. What was the original question?
I think you're answering the question really well, because Adam is an example of someone that, you know, maybe he would have used Vue previously, but he's using Alpine for this because he wants like a little bit of interaction, and he wants the syntactic sugar to make it a little bit nicer. Yep. But speaking of that syntactic sugar, I mean, one of the things you kind of market this thing as is it's like Tailwind, but for JavaScript is kind of what you're mm-hmm. saying it is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to do it. I have to go there. I have to ask you, what about separations of concerns? Like we're already doing this crazy stuff. Like what happened to separations of concerns? Should we really be putting this stuff in our DOM?
I mean, so with JavaScript, I feel like we've already, like with CSS, I think there was more of a culture of like separation between markup and CSS. With JavaScript, yep. like everybody uses single file view components. You're already intermingling your JavaScript and your markup. You're using JSX. You're literally writing JavaScript in your markup. So everybody, I think most people are already, have embraced the massive benefits of componentizing their front end.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that are more kind of traditional web developers, whether it is using a CMS or whether it's using Laravel, that they may or may not, like they just may use Blade, you know, on the front end to build their stuff.
So I guess I'll jump ahead and say the second target audience for mm-hmm. Alpine is people who use Blade, people who use, Rails and other, Phoenix and other backend frameworks and do backend server-side templating with include right. partials and things like that. And then they're sprinkling in JavaScript with things even as heavy as Vue, which is what I was doing.
And that's the way that Craft works with Twig. You know, and that's what all of us here, Craft is a primary platform, but it works exactly the same way. Exactly.
Yeah. So in that case, I mean, Alpine is a great fit. That's where I am. Like I don't build marketing pages hardly ever, but I work on Laravel apps all the time. And Alpine is perfect for that. And one of the biggest reasons I say, well, this maybe isn't why I say it's like Tailwind for JavaScript, but it's like Tailwind in the sense that you have to embrace some uglier, nastier markup. Like there's more junk in your markup. And Tailwind's answer to that is, well, extract a server-side partial or include or component for reuse instead of thinking, right. well, what am I going to do about reuse? I need a .btn class. Like I don't want to paste in this giant string of utility classes every time. So Alpine says the same thing. And mm-hmm. I've been pushing that paradigm pretty hard with backend components in Laravel. And it is a magical combination for me. So that is a match made in heaven as far as I see it.
That's really cool. So Matt, what do you think?
I have a clarification question. Andrew mentioned the byte cost of adding like a, you know, 60K for a library. What does this cost? Like, what is the size of
Sure. It's 5.43 kilobytes right now, gzipped. Pretty damn light. Yeah. I don't know of anything lighter really. And yeah. And you're not, so I just got a, like pulled up a brand new Laravel project with the Vue scaffolding and did a Hello World component. And what was it? I mean, I think it was in the 60s kilobytes. It was a lot. And that was production build, minified everything. It's just a ton, tons and tons of overhead. And then you pull in something like Lodash and all of a sudden and not import it right. And now your whole thing's like,
yeah, now you're screwed anyway.
Yeah. It's just over.
Yeah. So Matt, put that in your spreadsheet and smoke it.
Okay? on our rebuild for our site, I'm looking at the JavaScript right now, and yeah, Alpine's 5.4. My app.js is 12.9 kilobytes, and the main other library I'm using is Unpoly at 33 kilobytes, and that's pretty much it. Besides a carousel or something else, and then Tailwind is at 7.6 kilobytes. So
yeah, because you must be using Purge CSS, and exactly. Are you using a build step in terms of like a bundler, like Webpack or anything with your site?
I'm using Laravel Mix for that.
So you're using Webpack.
Yeah. Yeah,
just indirectly
without having to touch it too much.
Yeah, and there's some JavaScript in the Webpack that we needed ES6 for, but a lot of the JavaScript, if it's simple enough, it's just sitting in the HTML with the Alpine right now.
So Caleb, this is something that I recently put something out for Twig, but it actually would work with just about anything. So Composer manages your Composer packages inside of the vendor directory. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So one of the things with Craft and with Drupal and with a number of other CMSs that use Twig is you'll have a templates directory, which is where you'll have your templates. Right. So one of the annoying things about that is that there's no great way to do components that you can then share with other people. Mm. So I wrote a really small thing. It's just a Composer plugin. And if you have a Composer package of the type Twig bundle, it will create a vendor directory inside of your templates directory. And then you can just pull stuff in, right? So it uses Composer to do all this kind of thing. Is that something that would be usable or viable or even needed in Laravel, or does, I think it has its own system of being able to register bundles and then get them into the views directory, right?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I got you. So I think I'm making the right connection here. Tell me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. So in Laravel, if I, let's say the concrete use case here is I'm installing a package that is for error tracking. I don't know, for like an exceptions, like a whoops page. So
I'll set you up. I'll set you up with a good example. So Caleb made this amazing hamburger menu component.
Yeah, yeah.
That uses Alpine and Tailwind. Uh-huh. And then you package this all up in a nice little bundle, and you can publish that as a unpackagist, and mm-hmm. then someone can just pull it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the Laravel way of doing that, I would, publish it on Packagist. Somebody would compose or require my awesome hamburger menu. Was it a hamburger menu?
Yeah. Hamburger menu.
My awesome hamburger menu component. They do that. And now you can, I can register. You like namespace that. Mm-hmm. So I could register it in my service provider, which would run automatically. After they install it, it'll run automatically in their Laravel runtime. So by the time Laravel gets to, render the page, it will search for my included. And include it, so the user never has to touch my markup at all. But a lot of packages, that like anything that comes styled out of the box, inevitably will need to be changed or want to be
right.
changed. So then you would, in your service provider, you would configure asset publishing. Mm-hmm. So that if I was the consumer of it, I would say in Laravel, the like helper command line tool is called artisan. So they would do artisan, vendor, publish, and then my package name. And it would be like, hey, anything you need to publish, publish. And then I might stick blade views inside of, like in your case, the templates directory that then the user would own and they could manipulate.
So that's kind of the piece that's missing. So Craft is built on Yi, and it does have the concept of being able to publish these kind of bundles and register and all that kind of stuff. But we're talking about a different kind of developer. So there are a lot of people that are using these CMSs that they don't do PHP, mm-hmm. right? So they'll do Twig on the front end. So really it was like in Laravel, it's a no-brainer, right? Because you're already writing a Laravel app. It's not a big deal to just register the source and, bring it in and kind of away you go, because you're already doing it in PHP.
Yep.
So this thing was kind of just written for people that don't want to have to deal with that, and just as a way to bring in. I was just trying to see if there was any kind of a nexus here with Alpine, because it sounds kind of neat. Because with Alpine, the actual scripting is in the HTML that you're writing. So the component is all there, So you realistically could distribute this thing that is a component and is good to go, and people could just start using it.
Yeah, that's not tied to the build process. Like
exactly.
Yes. I guess the only thing I would say is you would need to have Alpine loaded. So maybe in that component, right. You would have the script tag. But then if they load two components that have that, then are you loading it twice? And maybe you just have a requirement like make sure Alpine's loaded and then import these components. Yeah.
Now, if it's only 5K, have you experimented with just inlining it? I'm serious.
No, I have not. I mean, you very well could just wait. What do you mean? Like inline the whole include?
Yeah, just inline Alpine.
Yeah. Yeah, you could very well do that. Sure.
Because then there's no waiting at all for anything to render. Or is that even a concern Alpine?
It would.
Because a lot of these frameworks like Vue, like one of the big problems that Flickr. People that are hybrid developers like you are and like we are, where you've got backend templating and then a front end framework. Yeah, you got that kind of Flickr where you're waiting for the JavaScript to load and be parsed and then for Vue to mount and then for the component to render. Yeah. And then there's that jank. Is that an issue with Alpine?
Yeah, it's less of an issue. So Alpine, I am amongst the top haters of PageJank and have gone through really great lengths to reduce PageJank. When I was really into Vue, like if I had a Vue component for something, I would make like a blade component for it that would render initially with the same exact styling so that when it like replaces itself. But that's a dark, dark, dark path.
I've done that.
Yeah. So you can go pretty far on that, but then basically you're rewriting all your Vue and Blade for the initial run. And so then I just ate it and did vCloak so that like nothing shows up until Vue's ready.
Yeah.
Which is better than like random stuff flying everywhere, but it's still, it doesn't feel good because you get the blank screen and then whatever. So Alpine does have xCloak. So if you are really, really, really dedicated to ensuring that no one ever sees PageJank, or that I guess that there's still be the PageJank, but that won't be, random stuff breaking everywhere, you can use xCloak. But So when Adam picked up Alpine, he's somebody who also hates PageFlicker and PageJank and goes through great lengths to seed the HTML with the default state. Like if he's going to have a VIF or like a VShow on something, he'll, you know, manually like style display none or hidden or something with the initial render so it doesn't show. And then, yeah, when JavaScript picks it up. So anyway, but he couldn't get it to work. He's like, he kept messaging me. He's like, dude, I can't get it. I can't get the Flickr. I can't get the page load. What in the world? He just like couldn't handle it. That like, what does Alpine do so well that nothing else is doing that somehow you can't get Flickr? So I will say that you can get Flickr. I think he has the world's fastest computer and fastest internet connection ever. But so I have seen Flickr, but Alpine has no virtual DOM, no mounting, no template compiling or anything like the other frameworks. So basically, as soon as Alpine's initialized, it starts walking the DOM. It, you know, it does like a document.query selector for the root elements, and then it'll walk the DOM of those and evaluate as it goes. So any X show that you have, like X show equals false or something, it'll hit that so fast right away, and then it'll hide it. And I guess I want to say that like stuff earlier in the page would get rendered sooner than stuff later in the page, which would kind of be what you want anyway.
Well, that's why I was mentioning inlining it. So, I mean, one of the things that we do for web performance is as part of the build process, it generates critical CSS. Right. So
right.
That
yeah, sure.
All the CSS that's needed for the above the folds content is there. It's inlined and away you go. I mean, if it's only 5K, man, like maybe you could just inline this thing and then there is no jank ever because you just inline the script and it's already there.
Right. So if I included it right now, the recommended solution is include the asset in a script tag in mm-hmm. your head tag. And there's a defer attribute on it, which presumably waits for the full page to load and document or like DOM content ready. DOM content loaded, whatever, event to fire to then execute or to then fetch that JavaScript and then execute it. So I could remove defer and it would presumably do the same thing, right? Like generally that's the bad practices because it is going to hold up the DOM rendering until it fetches Alpine,
right?
5.4 for the first run and then it's cached afterwards. So mm-hmm. you might be better off just removing defer, honestly.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Now, do you have two bundles for this thing? Is there like a modern bundle and a legacy bundle in terms of the builds of Alpine that you ship?
I'll let Kayer answer that question because he's
tell me Kayer.
He knows all about it. He made it.
Yeah. There's the modern bundle, and then there's a IE11 bundle. And the IE11 bundle has the polyfills all included right now in there.
Nice. So, and you're using the module, no module pattern for doing that?
Yeah, it uses rollup to configure it. So I think the rollup, there's two different configurations in there. And the rollup for the IE11 just imports all the polyfills directly into it.
So I mean, when you actually are putting the script tag into your DOM.
Okay. Yeah. I use load.js and then I do a check for if it's IE11 or not. And then pick the appropriate file based.
So you don't, the good news is you don't even need to. So you can use the module, no module pattern, and it will just work without any JavaScript and without any patterns at all.
I know that.
So the way that you do it is you do script type equals module and you give it the URL to the modern bundle. Mm-hmm. Legacy browsers that don't know anything about script of type module just ignore it completely, which is wonderful, which is what you want. And then you have another script tag and you add the no module attribute to it.
Yep.
And you give it the link to the legacy bundle. Modern browsers will skip it because they know what modules do. And legacy browsers will automatically load the legacy bundle for you. And you're done. That's it.
That sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So that would, I guess my first thought was like, well, is there some gap in the middle between stuff that supports between like new browsers and new browsers that support type module? But anything, but like you said, anything that has type module will be ignored. Right. So it covers both cases, mm-hmm. which is cool. I guess I haven't done a ton with like script type module. I'm fascinated by it. And I was messing with it the other day, but in my mind, it's like this new thing that I'll get to really sink my teeth into when it's widely supported. But
so I'll send you a link to it. But basically, this pattern has been around for like 3 years, something like that, probably more than that now. And it just works. And it's wonderful because it just works without polyfills. You just don't have to do anything.
That's fantastic.
And the other nice thing about it is that anything that is script type equals module, it's automatically deferred. Like that is just the loading. And that's the way that those right. JavaScript modules are loaded. So you don't have to worry about that either. Like it's going to do the right smart thing.
I ran into that the other day and I was like, how do I get this to load? How do I get like type module await basically?
Oh, you want it to block?
Yeah, because like when you're importing, I don't know, I was like importing an asset with type module and then using it in a inline script with type module. I couldn't get the order right or something because of the asynchronous. I don't know, but
yeah, well, that's the whole idea though, behind ES modules is that they should be independent of each other, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of like how you're loading them in and all that kind of stuff. Sure. Yeah. This was actually, it was in Phil Walton. I just looked it up and I'll add this to the show links, but he's an engineer at Google and he's the one that wrote about it. It's the first person that I know that wrote about it. And this was back in 2017. And it's a pattern that has been used for, like, I've been using it in my production setup for several years, for 2 or 3 years now. And it's been fantastic.
So great. Yeah. And my other thought was like, well, I really love that the only like the install step for Alpine is copy this one line script tag. And I could still keep that. There could just be like a little section like, want to support IE11, copy this 2-line script tag thing.
Yeah.
And then you're covered extra because you're only loading the bare minimum on all the modern browsers.
Yeah. And there's no JavaScript that you have to tell people to use. You can just be like, here, you know?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Good call.
What do you think, Matt? You going to start doing something with Alpine?
I'm a slow learner. And so I have to, you know, I have to evaluate it and figure that out. And I'm wondering, when is it not the right choice? Like my laptop is just covered in Vue and React stickers and I just write really complex apps. This is not me. I'm describing someone cooler, but
I have Vue stickers all over my laptop. So maybe I'm half.
So is it always the right choice? Tell me what the downsides are.
Yeah. It's definitely not always the right choice. So what was I going to say? Vue, React, Alpine, not the right choice. So one piece of messaging that people tell me I forget to be upfront about in the docs, and I should probably do that, is in my mind, it's not a swap in for Vue or React. So if somebody has a Vue or React app and they go, ooh, I want to try Alpine, in the same way that they might say like, ooh, I want to switch to Svelte. It's not like that. I'm not saying that you can't do most things you can do in Vue or React. What I'm saying is it's a pretty big paradigm shift to get to that point. And really, Alpine is born out of the spirit of backend server rendered apps that are pretty YAGNI and I don't know, use minimal browser stuff. And I don't know, they're just maybe a little bit more conservative on how much JavaScript they want to use or pull in or whatever. So where it's the wrong choice is if you want a true SPA, it's not an answer for that. If you want, I don't know, like there's no React, there's no Alpine native. It's sort of like the gap between jQuery and React. So it's, you know, all the places that jQuery would work, Alpine's going to work great. All the places that React would work, Alpine will not necessarily work. And it's not as robust. React is unbelievably robust, especially with all the new concurrency stuff that they're doing. If you're building Gmail, you should get into React. You should not use Alpine for that.
Caleb, I've got a new marketing line for you. Okay, here we go. If you want to understand what Alpine.js is, it's if jQuery, Vue, and Tailwind got together, did something unspeakable, and had a baby.
Yeah, the other project I work on live work for Laravel is like, if Blade and Vue had a baby, it would be a jelly. The logo is a jellyfish. If Blade and Vue had a baby, it would be a jellyfish. Yeah, no, that's good. It's true.
Well, so a question I have for you, though, is I've looked into, you know, what you've been doing with this. And at first, it looked like, well, Caleb wants some nice syntactic sugar for doing stuff. And he wants stuff that he does all the time. He wants it to be easy to do. Doesn't need a massive framework to do all this stuff. And Alpine, at least to me, when I looked at it, seemed like kind of like your answer for doing that. And one of the big paradigms that you had was that there's no virtual DOM, which is great. But then I saw that you added X4. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So now, aren't we kind of getting into, you know, the territory of where a virtual DOM is actually helpful? And what's the line, Caleb? Like, at what point are you going to say enough is enough? No, we are never going to have this feature because this would require a virtual DOM.
Yeah. So I personally try not to draw hard lines. I think Alpine is a blurry line itself. And my personal belief is if I always stay in the business of solving practical problems that I have, I'll never go wrong, at least for myself. But as soon as I start drawing hard lines and making like theoretical statements and whatever, then or jumping to the solution space or touting like random performance facts that nobody ever would encounter or care about, that those are the things I try to avoid. So
Don't talk about Rich Harris. He's not here. It's not fair.
I freaking love Svelte and Rich Harris. So do I. But you're right. Yeah. I know. That is funny. Anytime like any of those frameworks, they get on stage and they start talking about, you know, when you render 2 million nodes and you hit when you filter them, I'm like, I don't use any of it like that.
Well, it's funny though, because when you're sitting there, you're just like, wow, that's so cool.
Oh my gosh.
And then like an hour later, like you'll just like stop whatever you're doing and you'll stare off into space and you're just like, I don't know when I would ever do that.
Yeah, you know? It's an intangible metric, totally intangible. So route me back to the question.
So you added X4.
Yeah, right.
That,
right.
Where that seems like it's here? Getting into virtual DOM territory. Where's the line where you're just like, well, you know?
It's true. XIF and X4 are the two things that didn't get implemented right away. Mm-hmm. And when I encountered them, I went, okay, so XIF, I went, no problem. So for the listener, in Vue, there's VShow and VIF. If you have V and you pass a Boolean to each of them, if you have VIF on an element and the expression resolves to false, then it will not exist in the rendered DOM tree. So if you inspect in your dev tools, you would not see that element if it's false. And then when it's true, it pops in there magically. VShow sets display none. And then display block or removes display none or whatever. So it's in the DOM, but it's CSS hidden. So most people use VShow VIF when they're using Vue because it just kind of seems like a better word, like if instead of show. But for really no more reason than that, I realized that I started with XShow, but I realized that really, I don't know if I ever really need XIF. So I punted on XIF because, you know, like you said, we can get into that in a minute, why it's harder. But V4 is something that is genuinely useful. And in Alpine, I found a need for it multiple times. And so I think Alpine could still survive and succeed and be itself and be loved well without an X4, because it's usually in the context of server side rendering and you can do your for loop on the server, which is what I started doing, you know, a blade at for each or whatever. So that works, but it does break down when you want to drive out that loop from JavaScript data and not from something on the back end. And then even if you do drive it out from the back end, it gets a little bit hard to track sometimes, like whatever, we don't have to get into it. But I personally felt the need for X4 and I went, all right, what is it going to take to build something like this? And I wasn't going to go into a virtual DOM. That's probably just not going to happen ever.
So maybe that's the line.
Oh, the virtual DOM? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the line.
Yeah. So I wanted, it's like, can I do this in a resilient way? Like in a way that doesn't make it completely, basically, okay, you're right. Here's a personal line that I sort of have for the code base. And this might be a little bit like internal JavaScript-y, I might start to gloss over. But in my mind, if I'm never storing a reference to a DOM node in Alpine runtime, then I'm doing all right. Like,
okay.
I evaluate everything as I need it. So I thought with X4, I'm like, okay, I could, you know, render these four things, store them in a variable on an object. But I'm now like a maintainer of a JavaScript framework. So I'm using fancy words like storing a reference to a thing in a runtime. But really, I mean, setting a property on an object to a DOM element. So I try to treat DOM elements as something that I don't own and can't ensure that they'll always be there. Like when you're using a virtual DOM, you can, because you own them. So you are all about knowing about them. So my solution for X4 was kind of a hacky roundabout solution where I don't know if you want me to go into detail about it, but...
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious how you got it working. Yeah.
Okay. I think somebody was about to speak. Does anybody have any other input before?
No, I was just supporting you going for it.
Okay. So I think it's the exact same mechanism as XIF. And XIF is a smaller mental thing to wrap your head around. So in an Alpine component, you have, let's say this is a drop-down component. You have a div to wrap up everything. You have a button as the first child that says toggle drop-down. And then you have a div for the drop-down content. On that root div, you have X-data that declares that it's an Alpine component, and you set a JavaScript object, and that's your reactive data for the component. So in our case, we'll say open colon false. So we'll set, or yeah, open colon false. It's set to hidden by default. Then the button has a little VX on or at click to listen for a click, open equals true. So this is very Vue-like. And then that div, the drop-down content, we would say X hyphen, if it was just show, we would say X hyphen show equals open. And then it would work. This would totally work because I'm just toggling display, you know, none and not. But let's say we wanted to make it an XIF. So we could say, you would have to wrap it in a template tag. So we'd have a template tag X hyphen if open, and then the content inside of the template tag. Are we tracking?
We are tracking. The one question I have for you is, how do you carry the state forward? Like, I want this to be open initially, or I want this to be closed initially. Is it just the value you give to the property?
The value you give to the property. So open is set to false initially. And now Alpine, when it initializes, it's going to crawl the DOM. So it gets to the template tag and it goes, all right, what is the value of the expression inside XIF? Okay, it's false. So I'm going to look ahead to to, this is the part that's not going to make sense until I describe it to you. So let's flip it. Open equals true. I get to the template tag. I resolve X if to be true. And then I go, okay, I need the contents of this tag. I'll append the contents of this tag to the template tag so that it's a sibling. Because template tags, if anybody's not familiar, a template tag in a browser is ignored. So you can put it, and it's used for this exact thing. Like, so it's actually more of a native browser way of doing things. Yeah. You can put DOM inside of a template tag and you can, it's sort of a reference. You can then grab that DOM and shove it into other places in other areas of the DOM.
Yeah. So, and this is when we, like, I remember a long time ago, I used to have like a div that would be hidden and I would use that as like a thing to clone.
Right.
And then I'm like, and at some point I found the template tag. I'm like, oh,
yep.
Wait, I can use that.
What does Internet Explorer do with the template tag?
I don't know. I imagine it just ignores it. I don't know if it even supports it.
Care?
Let's ask the guy.
I think it's working. There's a template, HTML template polyfill. So that was one of the last things we got working with IE11, but it works in IE11 fine.
If you don't have polyfill, then nothing happens? Or it probably complains. It loves to complain.
Yeah, you'll get an error if there's no polyfill.
Because it doesn't.
Lovely.
I'm anyway, so let's glad Care is on here.
Let's keep tracking, Caleb. Let's not lose it. All right. We're inside here. Go ahead. We're in the template.
Great. So it resolves to true. I take the innards of the template and I append that element to right after the template tag.
Right.
Okay. And I set a property on that raw DOM element. So like if you document.querySelector an element and you have it in JavaScript, it's just an object. So you can add attributes to it, like dot foo equals bar. And then anybody can query selector that out of the DOM and do dot foo and they'll get bar. So I add a little dot, I don't even remember what it is, like dot underscore underscore X from if or something that says like, hey, I was created for the purpose of an X if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it.
First render. So the first render works great. Now let's say that you hit the button again and or do something to set open to false, which triggers a re-render. Alpine goes to the DOM, it gets to the template tag and it says, am I true or false? Okay, I'm false. And then it checks, is there any things that have been added by an exif after me? Yes, then remove them.
Okay, so you're, in addition to injecting the actual HTML code for this thing, you're also kind of injecting a little bit of state, kind of, right?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I don't really have to track the state, but yeah, I mean, I'm basically just adding,
or you're tagging, a better word would be like you're tagging it, right, with a property that indicates what's
like, hey, Alpine was here. Right. You know, so if somebody did manually mess with that, then they could break Alpine. So in that sense, and that's why you could smell that, like, hey, aren't you getting into the realm of like stateful virtual DOM-like implementations? And the answer is, well, yes, but it's in a really weird, like hand-rolled minimal way that I don't really think would matter that much. In my mind, it's a pretty rare instance that somebody would, I don't know, clone that node, replace it, remove the attribute, because it's not like an attribute on the DOM, that HTML element itself, which would be much more liable to be removed. It's in memory.
It also sounds like, though, I'm listening for what is the upper end of doing something with Alpine versus using Vue. And it's actually kind of nice in that it's Vue-like in its syntax, because if I've been enjoying, you know, my rugged Alpine JavaScript for some time now, and I've built kind of a lot, and I'm starting to strain it and want the virtual DOM and stuff, like kind of picking that up and using Vue at that point would not be a massive rethink of everything. I mean, it would kind of neatly transition if I reached the upper limit of what I was trying to get Alpine to do.
Right. Most of the binding syntax is exactly the same. You can colon class and then the object syntax, or you can bind attributes, you can exif and xshow work the same. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Well, the template tag thing, that's different, but I was just pairing with Adam before this on something that we were hitting a bug. We didn't know if it was Alpine or CSS or whatever. So we took that Alpine component and he swapped it out to Vue. So he like literally like commented out the script tag with Alpine, pasted in a script tag with Vue, and then and the upgrade path is basically like changing X's to V's pretty much.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And, you know, Caleb, I want to step back for a second and have like a semi-philosophical discussion about JavaScript and I think there and just kind of development in general, where I think a lot of people feel lost, or they feel like I'm left behind, or I don't know what the next thing is that I should be doing, or they feel like, you know, they're not using the modern thing. But Alpine itself is kind of bringing this into focus, that really what I think is going on is it's not that there is one way that you should be doing stuff. It's more that the proliferation of JavaScript frameworks, even CSS frameworks, you know, or whatever part of front-end development there is, really just indicates a specialization of the tools that are available, right? So as the problems that we're trying to solve get more complicated, it makes sense to have more specialized tools to make that specific class of problem easier to solve. Do you have any thoughts on that, or think that that is kind of what Alpine might be, is that you want to make this the perfect thing for solving? If you have this specific set of problems that you're trying to solve, this is the tool for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. Because there, I mean, Vue sort of started out as something humble and modest and spoke to people in my position. And then over time grew and grew and grew. And that's great. It's incredibly robust and it can do a lot of things. But over time, it sort of, it seduces you into so much more. And so Alpine is, yeah, it's not only just like a subset of Vue and Vue syntax, it just by nature of not, I don't know, like it doesn't draw you into more. In fact, right. it tries, I don't want it to be too opinionated. I'm not trying to control developers and how they use it per se, but by using it, you're not going to be drawn into going, oh, well, like now I should be using whatever, like, oh, I need to trying to think like I need to CSS and JS everything now. And like, I need to attend, you know, VueConf for ReactConf and hear all the things, and I need a tree shake, and I need a code split, and I need to SPA this, and I need a router and Redux, and now I need some like central data store, and how am I going to fetch that, and maybe I should do server side rendering, and maybe I'll do it all in local storage. Yeah, I'll persist it there, and that, you know what I mean? It's like
that's fine. What's nice about it is it's a one episode show. We live in a golden age of television. My wife and I have a system where if we're looking at a new show, we will ask people that have seen it, like, how many do you have to watch to know if it's for you or not? And the best shows are the one where you can get away with watching one episode, and by the end of that minimal commitment, you know whether or not it's for you. Some shows are complicated and you have to watch like eight to decide, but Alpine's great because you don't have to struggle with your build process and all these things, like, to try it and to work with it and to get a feel for how it works and know if it's for you. And so to me, it's a one episode show, and that's a great feature.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. And I hope it is that. I think one of my maybe advantages of being the creator of it is that I have like a super low tolerance for all that annoying stuff, like builds and stuff. Like I basically, I mean, NPM install is one of the, sends shivers down my spine. Like, it's like that to me marks Lycidae in JavaScript.
Are those shivers due to excitement?
No. No. So yeah, I mean, the source itself, I'm interested to hear what Kayer says, because like this, even like I've had to do lots of Vue source diving and things like that, and it feels very undivable to me. It's hard for me to track, and even Stimulus is written in TypeScript now, and there's so much going on all the time. And Alpine is like a handful of JavaScript files. It's just JavaScript. There's nothing insane. It's all browser APIs. It's like how I would write a framework with JavaScript I know how to use. I mean, there's some more advanced things for sure, but yeah, I'm interested to hear from like Kayer, from your perspective. Did you encounter that and think anything about like the way it's written?
Yeah, at first it was just completely foreign to me. Mutation observer. All these things going on, and that was mostly due to my lack of knowledge about it. But once I went in there and I just did a lot of console.logs and just keep adding breakpoints and see where it's going, what it's doing, and then once I saw what was happening, then I was able to piece together the puzzle and see what was going on. So yeah, there's no way I think I would have been able to make a contribution otherwise.
So Matt, I like your idea about the one show, you know, because, you know, like for me, I watched the first 5 minutes of The Boys and I'm like, this show is for me, right? And it is that kind of a polarizing show that if after the first 5 minutes you aren't drawn in, like it's all over. But you know, one of the interesting things you were saying before, Caleb, it reminds me of a show that we did recently with Harry Roberts on web performance. And one of the things that he said was, use as little as you can for as long as you can, right? And it seems like Alpine is kind of embracing that from the perspective of, look, use this framework. If you're doing kind of the basic meat and potato stuff that we do 90% of the time for 90% of the projects, use this, because it's a 5K library and it just makes your developer experience a little bit nicer. It's nothing you couldn't do on your own with, you know, vanilla JavaScript, but it makes your developer experience much, much nicer. But use as little as you can for as long as you can, I think, is a really nice, pithy way of putting it, in terms of like, you don't need to install React for this marketing brochure site. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yeah, no. That's That's very true. A friend of mine just got into web development like within the past few months, totally green to any sort of programming period, not even a technologist in general.
That's not good.
It's not good. He got hired and he came to me and he's, you know, he knows I'm a web developer. And so we met at a coffee shop and basically it's like he went to his first interview or whatever. And he goes, how long does it take to learn React? And I said, I'm like, dude,
you don't intervention.
Even know. I know. I'm like, you don't even know. And so he's just jumping right in. He's using Storybook and React and all these things, but he doesn't know JavaScript. He doesn't know HTML CSS even. And he's using CSS and JS and React and Storybook. And so basically when I meet with him just to help him out, the work that I'm doing is just dismantling the machine to show him like where all the pieces come from, where this all comes from and where, because you still have to know, you know, and it's all ES6 syntax. Like he's never even used a real function. It's all like arrow functions and stuff. So
that's the thing. People that learn this way, it's kind of like the movie Idiocracy, where there are going to be people wandering around that they don't know how to fix or use any of the machines that do all the thing, right? You know?
Yeah, it is interesting. Go on.
That's something I've been thinking about a lot lately and trying to figure out how to teach somebody who's brand new to just building a website in general is where do you start in a way that's responsible right now? Because years ago, I taught HTML and CSS when there wasn't a React or anything to be using. And that was cool because there was no pressure to use a higher level framework because it didn't exist. But now, you know, you can't build a website without a style sheet because everybody will know you're a dinosaur. So like, what is the healthiest place to start? Like what level of abstraction is like a nice balance to start with building something that looks and works like a modern website, but isn't so far, you know, abstracted that you have no sense for what a style sheet is or even what vanilla JavaScript is or would look like?
It's very true. I encourage you to go to killaborzio.com and find the style sheet. I don't think it exists. I think maybe I did end up pulling in some like really lightweight framework that somebody recommended. Anyway, that's mostly a joke because that was kind of experiment in resisting any sort of complexity. But yes, you're totally right. I was at a meetup and I was down with LiveWire that I mentioned a couple of times, by basically my main project that Alpine was written for. They go together really well, and pitching it. And I'm, you know, talking about the woes of the modern JavaScript ecosystem. And I'm going on and on, like you've already heard me do on this podcast. Like it's one of my favorite monologues. Mm-hmm. And this person who was there, cause it's, you know, it's a meetup, it's a general tech meetup. And he was a pretty new React intern. And so he's like pretty new to web and he uses React every day. And he goes, I don't get it though. Like it's, I'm like, really? Like, you don't think like Webpack's there? He's like, well, I mean, I just use Create React app. And it was just kind of this moment for me where I was like, yeah, you know what? Like from his perspective, when you're coming in, he's learning a paradigm. He's learning a simple command. You type create React app. You get a working thing in the browser. You type one command, npm run watch or whatever it is. And you're running your thing. You save. It all works. If you get an error, you get a nice error message. And you just look at the docs and you get pretty far. I could see that. And so it was kind of my first like awakening moment. Like, okay, a lot of what I'm doing is carrying around the baggage of having seen all the transitions, like all of us, you know?
Sure.
And so I do wonder the same thing. It's like, what is that? What do you do when you teach someone when they're coming in? And I think there's a balance. I think, you know, some of my ideals about like, well, let's start with HTML and then CSS. And now we'll learn JavaScript and how it uses, you know, like vanilla pre-ES6 JavaScript. Like, yeah, I don't know. Anyone else?
Well, I'm going to join in and change the monologue to a dialogue here in terms, because I feel a lot the same way that you do. And it's weird for me because I have a low level understanding, you know, having done assembly language, and it's weird thinking about the fact that people might not understand what various levels of the stuff that they're using do. And I think you're right. You totally can just jump in there, start using Create React app, start using the tools that are layered on top, and you can probably have a whole career of just doing that, just working in that one ecosystem. Where it becomes problematic is when something fails. Some part of your build process doesn't work or something breaks. If you don't have that basis and understanding of how HTML works, how CSS works, even how JavaScript works, when stuff breaks, like you're in big trouble.
Kind of, but then at the same time, you know, you can drive a vehicle around and if it breaks down on the side of the road, do you need to know how to forge a new engine block or something? Like that's where I struggle is like, what if I'm just an internet old person and upset that these people don't know what the cascade used to be like, you know? Right. Like, what if it doesn't really matter? What if CSS and JS is how they're most productive, and that's just how things are done? And I don't know.
I've been working on a project using React and CSS and JS and all that kind of stuff, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I can understand why people might enjoy working this way,
you know? Oh, sure. But you're a deep stack developer, Andrew.
Stop it.
Yeah. But the bar needs to be a little bit higher. I mean, I've been on some apps on my laptop, and it's the fan starts turning on and heating up, and you know, and then you go to some sites and yeah, they trick you with the gray blocks. There's no data yet, but you know, you can see past it, and you're still waiting another 15, 20 seconds for the data to load up and
the you hot know, lap.
Yeah. And with Alpine and Intercooler and Poly, with server side Livewire, server side HTML, it can be a lot faster without your net. I think it's, you can use it for much more than brochure sites, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, we've seen any number of websites that are using React but are doing it in not the best way, let's say, where they have like a 1 megabyte bundle of JavaScript, right, that the browser has to digest and parse and do stuff with. And if you are just onboarded, you know, kind of mainlined directly into that React ecosystem, and someone says to you, you know, hey, your bundle size is too big, you know, you should look at doing X, Y, and Z, you might have no basis for even understanding how you could fix that. And you would just look at them and say, well, that's React, you know, and not understand that there are other ways that you could do something to address this issue.
You could write jQuery spaghetti code like the old days and make...
Which is bad too.
Horrible app. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I guess two thoughts come to mind. One, Dan, is it Abramov or Abramov? The, you know,
yes.
One, yeah, is it Abramov?
I don't know. I know he's from England, so
spelling it correctly. So that's
Let's say Dan Abramov. He,
there you go.
Phenomenal developer, worth following if anybody hasn't heard of him. And he is coming out with a new course or book or something called, oh, I should probably know what it's called before I endorse it. It's called Just JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And it's like his way of, he's like, anything, if you go to learn JavaScript now, you know, you pick up some fat book that half the stuff doesn't even matter anymore. So he wanted to teach like the way he would teach JavaScript. And the thing that I've really been, it's been speaking to me, he refuses to say the word pass by reference. Like, he doesn't want anybody to have to know anything outside of this little universe that JavaScript is. So he's like, what I'm trying to do is give you a JavaScript mental model. I'm not trying to teach you how JavaScript stores its variables in memory. Like, right. That's not what this is about. It doesn't even matter. Like, what you need is a good mental model that's bulletproof. And so that's what it's sort of teaching you. And that sort of comes to mind a little bit about like, well, yeah, but like, what if something goes wrong? Well, I think there's a reasonable, like, there's a reasonable threshold for people. If you have a really good React mental model and JavaScript, because you're using JavaScript mental model, you could probably get pretty far. I guess the other thing I wanted to say is that I think you're right in that your car breaks down, you don't have to know how to forge an engine block. But I think that, and this is me, this is my total opinion, so I want to hear what your opinions are. But in my mind, I'm betting on the browser. I'm betting on knowing DOM APIs that browser support the JavaScript, you know, specification, the ES specification. I'm betting on those things. I'm betting on CSS. I'm betting on HTML. If you are betting on React as your bed of knowledge for web development, you're betting on something that's not as universal, might not exist in its same form a year from now. Same thing with Vue, same thing with any of these things. So in my mind, I'm like, well, it's a little bit different than forging an engine block, because these things are going to be around and you don't know if your tool is necessarily going to be around. So what do you guys think?
I'm betting on problem solving. As someone that has worked in many languages over the years, I think the thing that makes you a really good developer are things that translate from one language to another, you know, because really they're just kind of different ways of expressing problem solving. And I think that is something that I think is even more important in a lot of ways than, you know, knowing exactly how JavaScript stores stuff in memory. You know, it's more important, at least from my perspective, that you know how to architect things, you know how to solve problems, and you know how to approach it so that when a new API does come out, you are in a position to be able to digest it and use it. I mean, what do you think, Matt?
I might be in Caleb's camp. My tendency is to try and stay as close to the spec as I can. Mm-hmm. Like going from SAS to post CSS and just in thoughtfully, you know, adding whatever syntax, fun, or just treating additional functionality that's not native to CSS as plugins basically felt good. It felt good to know that I was using something that wasn't part of the spec yet, but
all right. So it feels good, Matt. It feels good, but have you looked at the job listings lately? Have you looked at what they're asking for? Almost every one of them is they want you to know React or something like that.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, I've marched to the beat of my own drum.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that I put out this tweet a while back. Like I said, this is one of my favorite monologues. It's definitely borderline religious for me. I have to watch my own biases, but I wrote this endearing tweet to the world. It was like, you don't have to learn Vue. You don't have to learn React. You don't have to learn Angular. It was all the things I said, you don't have to learn. I was like, the end of the day, let us be known by the web app, but by the websites we build, not by the frameworks we used or something like that. Or let us at the end of days, let us be judged not by our, you know, whatever. And it got a lot of good response. I mean, I think a lot of people needed to hear it. I needed to hear it myself.
Well, Kitsay, the developer of CZ, as well as React Academy, like he said something very similar. Like he was going through this, you know, everyone has seen that little chart of web technologies you need to know. And there's like this little flow chart and different paths you can take in terms of what you need to know to get certain places. And he looked at it, he's like, no, you don't need any of this. Like this is nonsense. Like I ship apps. Like that's what I do. And I don't use any of this crap. Like this is bullshit.
Yep. Yeah. The reason I said that was because a lot of responses were like, well, yeah, that's a really nice tweet, but look at the job board, bro. Like, I do need to learn React.
That's true. I mean, to some extent. Kare, what do you think?
I think it's hard to keep tabs on everything, but the paradigm is different, I guess, now. If by default, these are the technologies that people are learning, you know, out of college and in their first jobs, the demand for React and Vue it's crazy. And I've been on some side projects and, you know, the first instinct was to use Vue and the project didn't get done. And it took much longer. Whereas if we went with a traditional Blade and Twig, it would have got up and running and then we could have iterated upon that later on. But I think, yeah, the desire to build APIs and for a smaller app that's or prototype or, you know, it does take a lot of work if you go down these other technologies. And hopefully people are aware that there is a different way, you know, even though it's going upstream.
Well, Caleb, this has been amazing. I really appreciate you coming on and I appreciate you allowing us to kind of digress and wander off the path and talk about some stuff. I really found that fascinating and it was excellent finding out about Alpine.js, but that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. If you'd like to have every episode delivered to your favorite player, you can subscribe via RSS or find us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, please review the show on iTunes. It's the best place to help others find the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at DevModeFM. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Leave us a comment on the DevMode.fm website where we can continue the conversation. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
And I'm Matt Stein.
And thank you, Caleb Porzio, for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Ton of fun.
And thank you, Kare Shaw from Paper and More, for coming on as well.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Of fun. And now that I have completely burned the possibility of me ever working at 37 Signals or Basecamp,
done. You can come on the show and yell at you though.
Yeah. That would be wonderful.